The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Orders of the day, oral questions put by members to ministers. The time now is 3:28, and we will go to 4:28. And I'll recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. People who live in rural Nova Scotia are nervous about their emergency rooms, and they should be. Dr. John Ross released his report this week and identified 14 ERs as candidates for closure at night, to be replaced by a model of care that does not exist as of yet. Nova Scotians need assurance that their ERs will stay open as promised by the Premier. So my question to the Premier, will you stand by your promise to keep rural ERs open 24/7?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we are going to keep ERs open.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I asked him to reassure rural Nova Scotians that their ERs would be kept open 24/7. And somehow the Speaker or the Premier may have cut his answer a bit short. I hope when he stands up, he will continue to reply and reassure those Nova Scotians that their emergency rooms will remain open 24/7 as he committed to during an election campaign. The government is asking the Department of Health to come up with a 5% cut in its budget this year and next year and the year after. So my question to the Premier, are those savings going to come at the expense of rural Nova Scotians and their access to emergency health care?
The Honourable Premier.
Well, the answer for the Leader of the Opposition is no. It's not going to come at the expense of rural Nova Scotia. We have asked the district health authorities to take their role in making sure that this province gets back to balance. The simple reality is, for years, we have watched while spending has increased without the necessary increase in revenues to be able to support them. We're engaged in an exercise that will make sure that this province is put back on a firm physical foundation, Mr. Speaker.
The leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Speaker, many Nova Scotians have tuned out from the democratic process. It's embarrassing that the Premier has tuned out and forgot the fact that he promised Nova Scotians that their emergency room would be open 24/7. You can't backpedal away from it. That was the commitment that you made to Nova Scotians, that their emergency room in every community across this province would be open 24/7. Mr. Speaker, Dr. Ross, when asked how his recommendations dovetailed with the Premier's promise to keep emergency rooms open 24/7. He answered, and I quote, "I kind of ignored that," unquote. So my question to the Premier, are you going to keep your commitment to the people of Nova Scotia, or like Dr. Ross, are you just going to ignore your promise?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, like many people in this House, I was here and watched while the Liberals cut hospital beds, while they laid off nurses, Mr. Speaker, while they punished the people of Nova Scotia with unfair health care cutbacks, Mr. Speaker. We said very clearly during the election that we are going to protect health care, that we are going to make sure that emergency rooms stay open, Mr. Speaker. The lights will be on and the doors will be open in emergency rooms.
The Honourable Leader, the Progressive Conservative Leader in the House.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'll take leader if you want to give it to me. Since New Brunswick's new Premier, David Allward, is in Halifax tomorrow at the invitation of the PC Party for our upcoming leadership convention, Will the Premier commit to meet with Premier Aylward with a view to finding solutions in the unequal tax situation that is creating hardship for the people of Nova Scotia, especially those in Cumberland County?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I can inform the member opposite that I will be meeting with Premier Aylward tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it. I had a good relationship with his predecessor, and I don't know what his plans are, but my feeling is that that inequity may soon find a resolution.
The Honourable PC Leader in the House.
There you go, Mr. Speaker. And back to the Premier, since he's assuming things, let's see if he can admit now that his government's tax policy, specifically the increases in HST, are at the root of this inequity, and commit his government to resolving the issue of cross-border shopping that is responsible for causing great hardships for the retailers in Cumberland County.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to assure the Leader in the House of the Conservative Party that I intend to continue the very good working relationship that we have had with the Government of New Brunswick. I think there are many areas on which we can cooperate if we can find ways to resolve issues associated with cross-border trade. I, of course, want to do everything I can to resolve those. I've said before and I will say again, I think that the success of New Brunswick is important to Nova Scotia. I believe that the success of the aggregated Atlantic region is good for every part of it. So I'm going to continue that work.
The Honourable PC Leader in the House on your final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And specifically, will the Premier commit to using this first meeting with New Brunswick's Premier to put forward the idea of maybe establishing a working group of experts and stakeholders to come up with a plan for creating a level playing field for the residents of our two provinces to strengthen our region's competitiveness rather than competing against each other?
The Honourable Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I believe that already exists. It's called the Council of Atlantic Premiers. We get together to discuss just exactly those issues. But you would also know, the member would also know, because he was a member of the last government, would also know that there is already a partnership agreement on regulation and the economy, which we have been pursuing. And I think there are a number of very important areas where we can make progress. Over the last number of months, of course, there was an election coming up, so it was more difficult, I think, to get things move forward, but I have a long list of things that I would like to discuss with Mr. Aylward, and I'll begin that process tomorrow.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. For over a year now, Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians have been seeing the many high-priced reports and consultant studies that the NDP like to hide behind. The reports deliver the bad news, while the government ducks responsibility from tough decisions. Well, Mr. Speaker, it's business as usual when this week we saw the latest report delivered, and we see the NDP's clear promise to keep emergency rooms open 24/7, that means around the clock, and we see now that it was nothing more than a political statement to get re-elected or get elected. My question, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister of Health is, will she continue her government's agenda of avoiding tough choices, or will she personally be making decisions as to which ERs will no longer be operating 24/7 in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians, we know, value their emergency departments, and that's why this government is committed to keeping them open, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, we've met with people around the province. We hired Dr. Ross to meet with people around the province. We listen to people in communities, Mr. Speaker. We value the opinions of people in communities, and that's not going to change. I want to reassure people in communities, Mr. Speaker, that their health care is the number one issue for this health minister, and we will be providing better health care for Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker.
The The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we appreciate that the Minister has been consulting. That's all well and good, but there was a promise made. And the promise was for 24/7 emergency rooms open across the province. A promise made should be a promise kept. Another promise made by the NDP during that last election was to open the Cobequid Centre 24/7. Now, Dr. Ross recommends that Cobequid extend its operating hours by 1 or 2 hours a day, but not to expand to a 24/7 operation. So my question to the Minister, Mr. Speaker, is how will this government be able to justify opening the Cobequid Centre 24/7 when there's every indication that they will be breaking their campaign promise to 14 other communities in this province?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind the Honourable Member that there were numerous commitments made in the campaign, and I'm very proud as Minister of Health to stand here and point to the commitments that we made that we have already kept on health care. We are the only province in the country, Mr. Speaker, that has a program to support people who require health care outside of this province who are unable to get it here. That was a commitment that we kept, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I made a commitment on the floor of this House to work to find funds to fund Lucentis, Mr. Speaker. That's a commitment that we kept, Mr. Speaker. If that member wants to stand here and talk about commitments that aren't kept, I will go toe-to-toe any day, Mr. Speaker, on how we are able to keep and how we intend to keep our commitments on better health care for Nova Scotian families.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on your final supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's a little feisty today, which I guess is the first day back, and that's all fun. But, Mr. Speaker, there are commitments on the HST I don't hear the Minister talking about. No. She wants to talk health, but she doesn't want to talk the finances of this province. And I would remind her about the caregiver's allowance as well, which has been my God, it's difficult to define that. Mr. Speaker, we're looking for responsibility from this government, that they take responsibility for the decisions that are going to be made. And being in government and being a minister means exactly that, that you show leadership and take responsibility. So Dr. Ross has made recommendations about the status of 14 facilities across this province, and now Nova Scotians want to know who will take responsibility for the recommendations and the decisions that will follow. So my question to the minister is, will her government be sending directives to DHAs indicating which facilities will lose service or will have their service protected, or those that will, which might be expanded, or will she simply download those decisions to DHAs?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, DHAs are our partners in delivering health care services across the province. And Mr. Speaker, we're not able to deliver services without the participation of the DHAs. However, the DHAs work under our direction. And Mr. Speaker, as far as I know, listening to the commentary on Dr. Ross's report, all of which has been very positive, the DHAs are fully in support of many of the ideas in Dr. Ross's report. And we will work with them, Mr. Speaker, and we will work with communities to make health care better across this province.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians are increasingly alarmed on the issue of overcrowding in our provincial jails, especially at the Burnside facility. While both the current and former Minister of Justice have downplayed the issue of overcrowding, the Liberal caucus has learned that both the current NDP government and the previous Tory government have been giving temporary passes to offenders, allowing them to stay at home on the weekends, all the while getting credit off of their court-imposed sentence. So, Speaker, the current Minister of Justice has said the solution rests in the construction of a new jail to replace the existing facilities in Cumberland and Antigonish counties. While he narrowed down the site selection process to 3 sites in early July of this year, Nova Scotians still await a decision. So my question is will the Minister of Justice finally announce a site for the new provincial jail so that construction can begin immediately?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Well, I thank the member for that question, and I do need to correct some of the history, I think. It would be very important. Temporary absence started back when his government was in power for the last 30 years, and to make a suggestion here that it started with the previous minister or this government is once again an example of where the facts aren't being placed on the table appropriately or fairly. This has been going on, but one thing that this government and this minister is going to be doing is that we're addressing that issue, and the numbers from the past history and where we're at today are significantly less, and we're heading towards a zero.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on your first supplementary.
Well, you know, Mr. Speaker, for a minister who said he didn't even know about the practice, suddenly today he seems to know so much more. Mr. Speaker, the issue of overcrowding at our provincial jails, especially Burnside, is not new. Yet we have a Minister of Justice who provides us with excuses rather than solutions. While the minister dithers on selecting a site for a new jail, we all know that construction will take 2 years or more to complete. In the meantime, both the current Minister of Justice and his predecessor have issued over 1,000 temporary releases per year to offenders scheduled to serve weekend sentences. Ironically, the former Tory minister said he didn't know either. But, Mr. Speaker, let me continue. While our police officers, Crown attorneys and judges have worked to secure convictions and jail time for offences such as baseball bat beating, assault, failing the breathalyzer, sexual assault, and possessing child porn, our Minister of Justice saw fit to send them home for the weekend. So my question is, will the Minister of Justice inform Nova Scotians when he learned of these get-out-of-jail-free passes?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Once again, I get amazed by the way that the manipulation of the facts occur over there. The facts are is that this government and this minister has been taking steps since taking office in June of last year. We're in the process of adding a number of additional staff which have been put in place. We're in the process of adding over 100 new bunks in the Burnside facility. We're in the process of coming to a decision on the jail, which will be announced in the near future. It's a matter of that this government has a plan and we take action. But what we don't do is react and make decisions on an emotional basis. We make them on facts and we make them in the best interest of the taxpayers of this province. And it'd be good if that member was to get that in his mind.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on your final supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, it's interesting that the Minister of Justice talks about being honest and forthright with the facts because he knows himself that he's not really being honest with Nova Scotians when he said it's going to be 100 new beds at the Burnside facility. What he is doing is taking the 100 temporary beds that are now on the floor and he's bolting them to the wall. And he's saying that that's going to be 100 new beds. That is not truthful. That is not honest for him to be suggesting that, Mr. Speaker. So if he wants to talk about that, then we can certainly continue that debate. Mr. Speaker, again, the minister says he has a plan, yet it's been over a year, and he hasn't even been able to select a site for a new correctional facility. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians are overly concerned about justice issues in this province. They are hearing about murders on a daily basis, which is causing great concern, and yet they hear about offenders being sent home for the weekend rather than being able to serve their time in jail as the court imposed. My final question to the minister, is he prepared to have a serious discussion as to how we can put an end to these get-out-of-jail-free passes on the weekend here in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
I know that the Honourable Member across the way has his agents out there taking notes when I make statements. As the Minister of Justice... his agents. As the Minister of Justice, I'm on record very clearly stating that I firmly believe you do the crime, you do the time. And on the passes that he's referring to, Mr. Speaker, is that the court has already ruled that the person live in the community for part of the week and spend, on average, the weekend. What this government is doing is a complete review of that process. We've already eliminated some who were eligible in the past are no longer eligible. And once we have all the facts and able to make sound decisions that have an outcome as to what the impacts will be, we will make them, unlike his government when they were in power.
The Honourable Leader, the PC Leader in the House.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The people of Monarch Rivendale Estates and Beaver Bank are living in deplorable conditions when it comes to their water supply. They're living in third world conditions and continue to plead with their MLA to help them. The problem is so bad, Mr. Speaker, that residents have been forced to use snow to flush their toilet and spend thousands of their own dollars to hydro, fracture, and dry ice their wells. This community, which stands united behind me in the gallery, is resilient yet desperate for some help. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Service Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations. What programs do these residents have access to in order to help fund a new water system?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. I understand the frustration and concern that the citizens of that area are under. It is very upsetting to not have a reliable and safe source of water. 3 years ago, three levels of government worked together to provide water in that area so that they would be able to tap into. We have a fund in Nova Scotia called the PCAP, it's a Provincial Capital Assistance Program, which is $3.7 million, and $2 million of that already goes to Harbour Solutions. As Minister, I would love to fund everything across the province, but it's incumbent upon me to make sure that we spend wisely, and I have to make sure that there is going to be this money spent all across the province. I understand their frustrations, but I need to make sure that I spend this money in all areas of the province. Thank you.
The Honourable PC Leader in the House.
Mr. Speaker, thank you very much for the answer to the Minister. But this is a problem that Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations can fix. In total, Mr. Speaker, 28 water projects were jointly funded through the Canada Nova Scotia Infrastructure Stimulus Fund, yet the Monarch Rivendale application continues to be ignored. And I'm going to table four press releases from the NDP government that boast of municipal water projects funded through the Canada Nova Scotia Infrastructure Stimulus Fund. My question to the Minister, why did your government deny the association when they applied and followed the exact funding requirements and guidelines of the Provincial Capital Assistance Program?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I would just like to remind my members that this is a municipal issue, and that the municipality of HRM did not bring this forward with the capital budget. It was not one of their priorities, so it didn't get included in that, it did not get encapsulated by our department under that. So this came in after all funding had gone forward. So I just want to say that I recognize their frustrations and concerns, but under the PCAP funding, that money has been allocated to other water treatments across the province. Thank you.
The Honourable PC Leader in the House.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, this is more than just a municipal problem. It does fall with all levels of government on this one. Mr. Speaker, each resident of the Monarch Rivendale Estates will bear the cost burden because of their inaction. They'll be forced to make a one-time payment of more than $25,000 each to have basic access to water. Now, while their MLA, I'm sure who lives pretty much next door, has access to clean, fresh water, a privilege that he's enjoyed since it was installed in the subdivision since the mid-1980s, he's telling his constituents that they are simply out of luck. Will you and their MLA meet with these constituents who are here today in the House to explain to them why your government failed to help resolve this issue?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Honourable Member next to me and I have met with representatives of the Monarch Rivendale subdivision, and I welcome the opportunity to meet with them again if we can arrange a mutual time. And I just want to repeat that there are many water issues across our province, and many, many municipalities are needing reliable water sources. I recognize their concerns, but we have many across the province, and the funding is just not available. So as I would like to repeat, we have already met with them, and as all citizens, I am willing to... Mr. Speaker, I'm having a hard time concentrating because I'm having a little bit of extra
order.
Noise.
Order. May I finish?
It is my pleasure to meet with any citizens that have concerns around any of these issues, but I would like people to recognize that I have a certain amount of money in a budget, and it's incumbent upon me to make sure that that money is spent across the province. We have to live within our means. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations. This is a difficult time of year for many Nova Scotians on lower fixed incomes. They are facing winter and an expensive first fill-up of their oil tanks. Last year, this NDP government cut the Home Assistance Rebate Program from $450 to $200. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia. How much money did you save by cutting the rebate?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I just would like to make a correction on the question. This government did not make any cuts. We just honoured the commitment of the past government with their budget, as we said we would, and we provided a $200 rebate last year, and we are honouring that commitment. We are honouring that commitment. I would like to just to bring information forward that the department has sent out pre-populated forms to all people that participated in the HARP program last year. We've notified all of the MLAs, and we're making sure that we're getting the information to every area of the province that we can, so that we make sure that people that need that money get that money this year.
The Honourable Member from Glace Bay on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to remind the Minister that $15 million was set aside for the low and fixed income Nova Scotians under the Home Assistance Rebate Program, and it was reduced from $450 to $200, and that was the effect on many Nova Scotians. In addition, the Department underspent that budget by almost $4 million. My question for the Minister of Service Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations: is this how the government will cut 5% from the Service Nova Scotia budget on the backs of low and fixed income Nova Scotians, who are the very people who need it the most?
The Honourable Minister of Service Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We did recognize that that we didn't have a full uptake last year, and we were trying to figure out why. So this year we took steps upon to make sure that we got the information out. All MLAs received that, as I said. I will correct that we did not make a cut. We carried over from the other budget, and I will stand on that. I would like this for the members to know that this government is there to support people that need the support. This program, we're hoping it's fully implemented. With some of the monies that were not fully allocated last year, we made sure that we were getting to people that needed the money, so we contacted the Salvation Army and were able to provide funding for them, because sometimes people don't want to knock on the door of government. We know that the Salvation Army has a good reputation to help people in need, and so we supported their program to get the money out to Nova Scotians that need the support.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, my final question is for the Minister of Community Services. Your colleague has cut the Home Assistance Rebate Program to low and fixed income Nova Scotians from $450 to $200. Regardless of what the situation was, that is the effect on Nova Scotians, and she saved millions doing it. Many of these people are her clients with her clients with community services. Many are in my riding, and many are in yours. So, my question to the Minister of Community Services: will you go to the cabinet table and demand that the rebate be restored to those who need it the most to heat their homes this winter?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to thank the Honourable Member for his question and his concern. I do not have to go forward to my Cabinet members because we focus on poverty reduction. Every time that we're meeting, we discuss it, and myself, I'm very committed to that. For example, this government, in its first year mandate, invested $72 million in poverty reduction credit, affordable tax credit. And that's unheard of. We also brought in other tax reductions on children's clothing, and I can go on and on with lists of items that we have brought in order to help those that are on lower incomes. We're also doing a total redesign in poverty. I just spent this week at a poverty conference in Truro, and very proudly had a warm welcome from the recipients there, because we're going forth and making a difference in terms of programs that we're bringing into those in Nova Scotia to make a better life for Nova Scotians. Thank you for the question.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Finance. Statistics Canada said that the NDP HST tax hike gave Nova Scotians the highest incidence of inflation in the country when it was introduced in July, making life, everyday life, more expensive for Nova Scotians. How will your decision to make life expensive for Nova Scotians do anything to help grow our economy?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just would point out to the member that if he'd updated his figures with the August statistics, he would find out that we are back to normal. In fact, the same thing happened on retail trade, Mr. Speaker, where really what happened is exactly what you would expect to happen. There was a bump up in June when people were advancing their purchases. There was a drop in July, and I'm happy to say that with the August figures, that we are simply back to normal. And so the impact on the economy, Mr. Speaker, has been exactly just normal. And so I certainly don't accept the member's premise. The premise underlying the question, Mr. Speaker, this government, Mr. Speaker, is dedicated to growing the economy with good jobs and doing it while living within our means.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this increase in the HST by the NDP is taking out $300 million out of the pockets of Nova Scotians. And it's going to result in fewer job opportunities for Nova Scotians because they're living in an overtaxed economy. Mr. Speaker, consumer spending did drop in July, and that's no mystery to us because people, when they see taxes go up, things cost more, and it creates changes in how they spend. It's proof that the NDP are hurting Nova Scotians and damaging our domestic economy. Furthermore, PricewaterhouseCoopers warned that our corporate taxes are quite high in this province. And if we look towards 2013, New Brunswick's corporate taxes are going to be in the neighbourhood of 26%, while ours are slated to be 34%. And this can also cause jobs to leave our province. So how is the minister going to create jobs in rural Nova Scotia when you cannot manage to contain your costs of your own operations, but instead you choose to pass them on to Nova Scotians through higher taxes and making it harder for the private sector to create jobs for Nova Scotians right across this province? Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians want to know that the finances of the provinces are in control and in good hands, and I can assure them, Mr. Speaker, that they are. Now, Mr. Speaker, under that crowd, when they were in government, do you know, Mr. Speaker, do you know that government spending in this province doubled in the 10 years that they were in government, Mr. Speaker? We know that that's not a sustainable path, Mr. Speaker. We know that we're going to get back to balance in 2013 with a balanced program of increased revenue and expenditure restraint, Mr. Speaker, and growing the economy and creating good jobs.
Yeah. The Honourable Member for Inverness on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this minister was voting for those investments.
He was.
And he was voting against. He was voting against many of those 8 balanced budgets that were given to Nova Scotia by the good stewardship of the Progressive Conservative Party. And Mr. Speaker, I'm getting tired of the whining and sniveling of this minister, and I'm going to move my question to the Premier. It appears this government doesn't need the private sector to create jobs in Nova Scotia. The NDP is going to do it themselves. Well, I would like to thank the NDP for the jobs they're creating for our North American economy. It's just too bad that they're on Wall Street for the investment banks that are only too happy to finance their fiscal irresponsibility. My final question to the Premier. Your government is chasing business away from Cumberland County to New Brunswick. Why does your government continue to make choices that will result in young people leaving this province to find work away from their families?
The Honourable Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to remind the member opposite that he's the one who wrote me and congratulated me on the investment in the biomass project and the... because he said it was good for his area, going to create hundreds of jobs. And Mr. Speaker, I agree with him on that. I don't agree with him on what he's just said. But I will allow the Minister of Finance an opportunity to respond to what he said.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And speaking, Mr. Speaker, of boring, I would like to say that despite the news release that the member issued back in July, we, over the summer, went back to the markets, the Wall Street markets that the member is talking about, and we were able, Mr. Speaker, to refinance part of our debt at a lower interest rate than has ever been achieved before.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Economic and Rural Development. Mr. Speaker, in December of last year, the NDP decided to cut the long-standing ferry service from Yarmouth to New England. This was done without public consultation and without providing evidence to the public. In fact, Mr. Speaker, it took half a year after this reckless decision was made and continuous questioning from the Liberal caucus for their own transportation study to be released to the public, which actually supported a ferry service in Yarmouth. My question to the minister is quite simple. Where is the evidence, where is the homework supporting this government's reckless decision to cut the long-standing ferry service between Yarmouth and New England?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for his first question during QP. The decision to cut the fat, to cut the cat, was a long,
Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The decision was a long process. We spoke with the owner of the Cat Ferry at great length, and with all due respect to the owner, we kept those conversations between us. I'd like to say is that I'm not sure what transportation study that the member opposite is referring to, because certainly the transportation study that I read, the one that was hit by ACOA and that was released on ACOA's timelines, was one that supported the decision that the ferry certainly wasn't sustainable, and it just made good business sense. It just made good business sense, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, since this minister and this government is unable to provide any sort of analysis or evidence supporting this decision, I would like to share some cost-benefit analysis that has recently come out. Spencer Consulting has recently determined that the government made the wrong decision for the people of Yarmouth and for the people of Nova Scotia. They have determined that, quote, an annual investment of $6 million generates over $22 million of revenue to the residents of Nova Scotia, end quote. They continue to state that, quote, this investment exceeds typical standards in the private sector, end quote. They conclude that, quote, The Yarmouth to Maine Ferry Service performs with strong financial indicators, and the financing of the ferry service for the 2010 year was the more publicly beneficial strategy, end quote. Mr. Speaker, will the minister publicly admit to the people of Yarmouth and the people of Nova Scotia that he and his government made the wrong decision in choosing to cut the ferry service, especially with no economic development plan for the region?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And before I respond, I would ask the member if he would table that information.
Certainly.
I'll say this, Mr. Speaker. It's somewhat disheartening, and I do not want... It does nobody any good, and certainly doesn't do the tourist industry any good if we're going to stand here and bicker and debate back and forth about numbers. Numbers can do just about anything that you want them to do. And so I think it's a disservice and an injustice to the people in Yarmouth for us to be debating numbers. I think what you should know, Mr. Speaker, is that $400,000 through Team Southwest was invested in Yarmouth. And what the people in Yarmouth are doing, they want to get on with their lives, Mr. Speaker. We are advertising Yarmouth as a destination. We want to attract people to Yarmouth, and we are doing this with a group from Yarmouth comprised of people from federal government and the province of Nova Scotia.
Thank you. I'll return now to the Honourable Member for Yarmouth on your final supplementary.
What does the tourism industry know good in Nova Scotia is making decisions without evidence and making decisions that hurt that industry. Mr. Speaker, Rod Hotels and Resorts, owners of the two largest hotels in Yarmouth, lost over $745,000 in revenue from 2009 to 2010 as a result of this government's reckless decision to cut the ferry. They will not be able to sustain another season like this, putting the jobs of the 150 people that they employ in jeopardy. This, Mr. Speaker, is a result of this government's recklessness. Tourism in Yarmouth has suffered this year. The economy in Yarmouth has suffered this year. The government has forced residents of the province to forfeit over $22 million in revenues. The next tourism season is already in jeopardy. And in addition to the immediate loss of jobs, this government has put other businesses and families at risk. My question to the minister is this. Will the minister help our community secure a ferry service for 2011 in order to save our tourism industry and support those other businesses and people that have been affected by this government's rash decision?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is disappointing that a new member in the House can learn the rhetoric so quickly. Do you know?
Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker. This is a government that doesn't speculate. What we do is we plan for the future. For the first time in two decades, we've got a government that actually not only does it have a strategy, but actually has a plan. And what's more important, Mr. Speaker, it has an implementation plan, how we are going to implement things. Mr. Speaker, we are doing a lot. In fact, Mr. Speaker, if I may, tourism in the province of Nova Scotia overall, Mr. Speaker, is up this year. And it's because... That is a result. That is a result of the Department of Tourism working with the sector and the stakeholders to make tourism what it is.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Economic Development. The Canadian Federation of Independent Business recently released a report entitled Cities in Boom, and it ranked 100 cities in Canada
on their individual entrepreneurial climates. And in that report, and I'll table that report, Nova Scotia fared very poorly, Mr. Speaker. There were no Nova Scotia communities in the top half. CBRM and HRM ranked 85th and 89th, respectively. The CFIB says that good public policy is critical, and they've looked at the presence of supportive local government and regulatory policies. My question to the Minister, through you, Mr. Speaker, how do you expect business and opportunity to come to Nova Scotia when your government continues to hurt small business and make us less competitive with higher taxes?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I just recently, in the last 2 weeks, met with the Canadian Federation of Independent Business. And with respect to that statistic, Mr. Speaker, I will say this. That is something this government inherited. And Mr. Speaker, I will add that the Canadian Federation of Independent Business agreed with us that we are on a good track.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on your first supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and that's interesting because the report's clear and the sign points that Nova Scotia's moving definitely in the wrong direction. And they've had a year and a half to think about this and have done nothing, Mr. Speaker. My first supplementary to the Minister, when will your government finally take the advice of the small business owners across Nova Scotia, create a competitive tax structure, and provide real opportunities for small business owners in this province?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, for the first time in 20 years, this government will be boasting very, very shortly a plan of both jobs here in Nova Scotia and how we are going to grow the economy. This will be a strategy, Mr. Speaker, that will not end up on a shelf somewhere, because this plan will have ways on how to implement it, and it will be implemented, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on your final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I meet with my business community regularly, and I'm sure that they'll all be waiting for the boasting to begin and the success that they're being offered, and we don't see it any time, nor does the business community, and they're not going to see it. My final supplementary, Mr. Speaker, what is this government doing to ensure the Nova Scotia businesses of today are not the Saskatchewan businesses of tomorrow?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, Mr. Speaker, for the first time in 20 years, we have a government that can boast about reducing the tax to businesses in the province of Nova Scotia. And, Mr. Speaker, for the first time in 20 years, we have a government that has looked at, analyzed, and will have a plan, and the plan will be coming forward very, very soon. Nobody in 20 years, Mr. Speaker, has done anything with respect to a strategy for the problems of Nova Scotia. And if I was that member over there, I would be ashamed to raise this issue in the House of Assembly.
Order, please. Order. The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, in his recent submission to the Premier, The Way Ahead for Nova Scotia, Donald Savoy writes, quote, "I have long believed that a competitive tax regime is a powerful economic development instrument. Nova Scotia's tax structure is not competitive. And it became even less competitive in July when the NDP hiked the HST. Mr. Speaker, would the Minister please explain why he halted the review of our provincial taxes, which was started in the spring of 2008?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, this is an old question. I'll give the same answer the question member raised. When I came to office as Minister of Finance, there was no tax review underway, Mr. Speaker. It was an absolute dead stop. It is this government that has restarted it, Mr. Speaker.
Yes.
We understand the importance to Nova Scotia families and Nova Scotia businesses of getting our fiscal policy right, Mr. Speaker. But Nova Scotians also understand that in order to deliver quality health care, quality education, it is critically important that we live within our means. And that's why in the budget that I tabled in April, Mr. Speaker, we laid out a four-year plan. It's a good plan, it's a solid plan, and we're on track to meet it.
The Honourable Member for King's West on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know Nova Scotians are waiting to engage in further consultations, not just an internal review. Mr. Speaker, it is true that the previous Conservative government spent heavily due to extra offshore revenues. But since taking office, the NDP has made those years seem like they were golden years. The minister has increased the debt by nearly $1.7 billion in his first two budgets in 1 year. This minister has decided to punish businesses and consumers by making every transaction more expensive. Nova Scotians are sick and tired of listening to the NDP's excuses for why they can't get the job done. Mr. Speaker, will the minister explain why he and his NDP government are intent on driving young people, businesses and families across the border and into other provinces to find a place to live and work?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we understand that Nova Scotians want their government to have solid finances in order that we can deliver quality health care, quality education, the services that people expect and need from their government, Mr. Speaker. But we reject the Liberal and Conservative heritage in this province of spending far beyond our means, Mr. Speaker. Who do they think they're kidding, Mr. Speaker? Mr. Speaker, the day that I walked into office as Minister of Finance, this province had a $13 billion debt run up by Liberals and Conservatives.
The Honourable Member for King's West on your final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I don't want to spend the remainder of the question period going through the list, but on June the 9th, 2009, the province was $12.5 billion in debt. Now they're well over $13 billion, plus the tangible assets, capital assets. Mr. Speaker, it doesn't matter where you look. Every indicator shows Nova Scotia to be at the bottom of the barrel when it comes to taxes and prices. Mr. Speaker, since the NDP took office, things have only gotten worse. Nova Scotians were hit with the HST hike in July. Gas prices spiked on Thanksgiving weekend, opening a 10-cent per litre gap between Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. Power rates continue to climb, the unemployment rate hovering around 10%. And now we learned that Teltech will be closing their Amherst call centre, putting 215 people out of work. The only competition this minister seems to want to win is the race to the bottom. Question, will the NDP stop damaging economic growth in the province, commit to a full and comprehensive public review of our taxes?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, I could pay down the debt a lot more quickly if I could find a way to turn opposition rhetoric into currency. Mr. Speaker, as a member is well aware, a very significant part of the budget last year and this year was stimulus spending, Mr. Speaker, and my understanding up until today was that stimulus spending was supported by all parties in the House, but apparently the opposition is against it.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Education. The Cape Breton Victoria Regional School Board held a press conference today. Holy Angels High School is facing closure and the board is trying to find a way to keep the school open. My question, what options are being looked at for Holy Angels School?
Through the Speaker, to the Minister of Education, the Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to start off by recognizing the tremendous tradition and history of Holy Angels. I had the opportunity early this year to visit the school and met with the representatives of the staff and the school board, as well as the the student body and the parent association. And, you know, certainly our government recognizes the role that that facility and institution has played in the lives of many, many women in this province. And we certainly understand that the board values that program. But it was the Sisters of the Congregation of Notre Dame who decided to sell their property. And the officials of the department worked very closely with the board to help identify what the options were with the board. And I believe the press conference this morning was to notify the community that one of those options, buying the school and investing, you know, $10 million, according to the board's own study and evaluation of what the renovations would cost. And they... We don't have the ability as a province to buy a private building and give it to a school. So anyhow, if I may be permitted to finish, yep. We continue to work closely with the board as they work on their other options, and we're providing as much assistance as we can. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The board is working hard to find solutions, but apparently the Department of Education is not helping them. Students and parents are left wondering what's going to happen should the school close. In fact, the school could close at the end of this academic year, leaving parents little time to plan. So my question is, does the Department of Education have a plan to make sure the education of these students will not be disrupted?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is not the role of the Department of Education to decide the future of Holy Angels School.
Yes, it is.
And those are decisions made by the board.
Order. The Honourable Minister of Education has the floor.
It's certainly our understanding that there are several other options that the board are considering. And we're not going to be making the decision for the board. We will assist them in researching them and making the best possible use of public money for all students in that school board. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So we still haven't heard what the options are. And what we don't know is whether this minister is going to make it clear whether she supports Holy Angels' current mandate. Will this department continue to support Holy Angels as a female high school? And what are the options?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Those are questions that you should be putting to the school board. They have the responsibility to make those decisions. I understand that they have set up a committee that is meeting and working on identifying the options and what the cost might be, and will be bringing that report back to the school board. Certainly, from a provincial point of view, our first priority must be due diligence. And the reason that we don't have the authority to buy a private building, but secondly, we don't think it's a good investment of public money to pour $10 million into a building that is over 50 years old. But we will support the school board in looking at other options. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question to you is to the Premier. Mr. Premier, you're likely aware of the immense controversy and anger created by your government over plans for a new forestry strategy for Nova Scotia. Forestry being the largest single economic driver in Nova Scotia's economy. Our caucus has met with numerous groups this summer, and I know the letters flowing into your office have been above average. My question to you, Mr. Premier, is simply this. Will you explain to us and all Nova Scotians what a clear cut is here in this province?
The Honourable Premier.
explain. I can explain what a clear-cut mistake is, and that is the idea that this was a strategy that was put in place by us. In fact, it was put in place by your government. In fact, you're the ones who started the whole process, Mr. Speaker.
Order. The Premier has the floor. The Honourable Premier.
What we are doing, Mr. Speaker, is taking the opportunity to meet with stakeholders who are interested in ensuring that there is a good strategy, a good natural resources strategy for the forests of this province. We intend to complete that process. The minister is fully engaged, meeting not just with the stakeholders from the forest industries, but also with those who are recreational users. So, Mr. Speaker, we intend to make sure that we have a policy that makes sense for the forests of Nova Scotia, that makes sure that the resource is available for generations to come, and to ensure that we have a sustainable forest and a sustainable industry, Mr. Speaker, in this province.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West. Order. The time for oral question period is over for today.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.